Welcome. It's good to be with you. Zach, Cheryl, Abby, Owen, thank you so much for navigating this strange reality of these moments with so much grace and so much warmth. Just really, really appreciate what you bring as a family to our community and to these online times together. It is not an easy world to navigate right now. And I would say advisedly that it's not an easy world to navigate right now, and that's coming from somewhere that in pretty much any global perspective has a relatively easy world to navigate. So our thoughts go to not only our own challenges and struggles, but also to those of the millions and millions of people for whom this is so much more devastating than whatever we're experiencing here day by day. And here on this continent, of course, many of the people for whom this struggle is exponentially more difficult are First Nations people. And so we begin with an acknowledgement that the land on which we gather is land that we are grateful to be received on in an ongoing way. It is Treaty One land, and we want to live here and function here in ways that honor that and respect it and dignify it and work toward its fuller realization. I'm going to take some moments to breathe together. What I thought we would do this morning is I thought we would just breathe. So not any particular count or square or deeper breathing exercise or anything, but just to be conscious of breath in and breath out. When I was meditating on my own this morning and breathing, I felt as though that's what I needed, and I realized that what I need is not necessarily what all of you need. I understand that. However, I can't bring someone other than myself to this, so that's what I'm going to bring. I'm going to suggest just in through the nose, out through the mouth, breathe deeply, be aware, be conscious of your breath and its life-sustaining reality. And if you wish, all of this is if you wish. If you wish, perhaps also a few moments to be conscious of those for whom breath is coming harder this morning, perhaps not least of all because they are wrestling with this respiratory illnesses that come with this virus. So let's just breathe together. I'll say something when we're done, but I don't have any particular count to keep track of or anything. All right, so just deep breaths in through your nose, out through your mouth. Let it flow all the way down into your body and bring life with it. All right, here we go. Let's just breathe together. Peace, everybody. I like to do that until I feel my shoulders starting to come down, you know, just starting to rest a little bit. This is a time of year where if you spend any amount of time outside, particularly in places that have berry bushes, you can smell that there's a unique smell. And it doesn't always seem like a pleasant one. I mean, it varies, but it is the smell of all those berries on the ground. It's the smell of the decay of fall that is the ground of new life and spring. And in some ways that I wanted to mention that partly because it feels like an important seasonal reality for me and a marker for me when I notice it, but also because it opens into what I want to explore in the talky bit today. Today's talky bit feels a little bit tricky to me because I want to talk about something that feels hopeful to me, but that might also assail our contemporary sensibilities and values in ways that make it hard for the message of hope that I believe is essential and central to this, rather, to get through. They might kind of get in the way. So let me just say before I get into the details that this is my perspective this morning. I am exploring an idea that for me is an ancient path to hope and a good future, even if it doesn't always sound or feel that way when you're in the middle of exploring it. There is a lot of music in our house. someone is usually practicing an instrument somewhere, sometimes more than one at the same time. I mean, more than one person is practicing an instrument at the same time, not one person is practicing more than one instrument at the same time, to be clear. And that's pretty great. I mean, the piano is in the room I'm in. It's here on the main floor. There's always some guitars lying around. It's not unusual for somebody to be singing while they make their lunch or go about whatever they're doing. Just so you don't get the wrong idea, it's not like I'm living in a musical. It's like some kind of, it's not like some kind of super floaty, you know, just happy all the time, whatever, strangeness. But it's mostly just normal, you know. That's just how it is around the house. Sometimes those sounds overlap and they're a bit cacophonic and there's wrong notes and all the other things that go with practicing music. But that's just how it is around here. There's a lot of music. And Cale and Taya, in particular, are likely to drop song fragments, just whatever they're singing in their head. And while they're going about doing whatever they're doing, all of a sudden I'll just hear somebody singing a line from a song. And lately, one of those fragments has been the first line of the chorus from a song called Maybe It's Time. This is a song that was made famous by Bradley Cooper in the 2018 remake of the remake of the remake of, you know, A Star Is Born. And you could probably, if you've been, you know, in proximity to a radio at all lately, you can probably hear this one in your head. Maybe it's time to let the old ways die. That's sort of the first line of the chorus. And I was thinking about, I want to work with the ideas in this song a little bit. And I was thinking about that. And I was thinking, you know, I could just read you the lyrics. But as it turns out, one of the songs that people have been playing around here, or the Cale in particular has been playing around here a lot lately, is that song. And so I know he knows it. And I kind of had it in my head, and I thought, I'm just going to sing it for you. So that's actually what I'm going to do. I'm just going to adjust some things here. I'm going to get Cale in here because he's hanging around somewhere. And so you still got audio there. Somebody give me a little thumbs up if you still got audio. I just unplugged my mic and went to the generic mic for this. So just give me a moment to get reset up here. And I'm going to get Cale in here, and we'll do this tune for you, okay? Just for fun. Hang on. Cale, you around? I gotta find him first. I had to find him. But I did. He's here. So we're gonna sing this song for you. It'll be a change from the talking head part of things, you know? So as soon as Cale gets here, we'll get sorted out and we'll do this. Cale, you just have to kind of ignore the fact that this thing keeps resetting, because that's just how it is this morning. Maybe it's time to let the old ways die. Maybe it's time to let the old ways die. Takes a lot to change a man. Hell, it takes a lot to try. Maybe it's time to let the old ways die. Nobody knows what awaits for the dead. Nobody knows what waits for the dead. Some folks just believe in the things they've heard and the things they've read. But nobody knows what waits for the dead. I'm glad I can't go back to where I came from. I'm glad those days are gone and gone for good. But if I could take spirits from my past and bring them here, you know I would, you know I would. Nobody speaks to God these days. Nobody speaks to God these days. I'd like to think they're looking down
laughing at our ways. Nobody speaks to God these days. When I was a child, they tried to fool me. Said the world and man was lost and hell was real. Well, I've seen hell in Reno. This world's just one big Catherine wheel, spinning still. Maybe it's time to let the old ways die. Maybe it's time to let the old ways die. It takes a lot to change your plans, dream to change your mind. Maybe it's time to let the old ways die. Maybe it's time to let the old ways die.
Thanks, bud.
No problem.
That was fun.
If you look up the lyrics to that sign, a song online, you're going to find it, probably going to find it credited to Bradley Cooper, because the internet is smart about some things and not so smart about other things. But the song was in fact written by a songwriter that I've enjoyed for a long time, a multi-Grammy winner, music industry veteran, a guy named Jason Isbell. And it's a pretty interesting song in any context, and it's significant in the movie where Cooper's character sings it for the first time in an empty drag club. And the only audience there are a couple of the drag performers that are still kicking around. And that performance and its setting alone can make me well up just thinking about the prejudices and perspectives on human gender and sexuality that have been used to bludgeon people for so long and how desperately those need to die. In the setting of the movie, it's also a way for us to start to get an inkling that it's time for an aging, mostly washed-up performer to make way for a younger, up-and-coming one, complete with some rather direct foreshadowing of how such a thing might come to be. And it's an interesting part of how the song fits into the story as well. It's also a fairly pointed worldview song. And you can see that most easily in the verse, sort of reverse second bridge combination, where the singer says, "Nobody speaks to God these days. Nobody speaks to God these days. I'd like to think they're looking down and laughing at our ways. Nobody speaks to God these days. When I was a child, they tried to fool me. Said the worldly man was lost and that hell was real. Well, I've seen hell in Reno, and this world's one big old Catherine wheel spinning still." I had to look up Catherine Wheel to get the impact of this. I'm not going to go into the details this morning because they're just altogether too gruesome, but the short version is that the Catherine Wheel was a torture device used from about the 8th century BCE until the early 1800s to slowly, slowly, slowly break a human being. So the idea that the world is a big old Catherine Wheel, that's a profound and significant idea, this thought that the world that is such a torturous place, that existence is torturous and designed to be that way, not even evolved to be that way, but designed like a Catherine wheel, like a device to slowly, brutally break us, and that the world itself is grim enough to not require the invention of any places of eternal torment. We have torment aplenty right here. That's all in that little bridge. Well, I've seen hell in Reno, and this world's just one big old Catherine wheel spinning still. That's all in there. That is, in my opinion at least, an incredibly sick and twisted view of God, not to mention the place of human agency in dispensing justice on behalf of God. One of the reasons that I would react so strongly to that idea and to that piece of history is because in the short piece of research that I did on it, among the other things I discovered is that the history of the Catherine wheel is very bound up with the history of Christianity. Surprise. And one of the ways that that comes clear is that if someone survived the wheel or they fell off it before they died or in some other way escaped coming to their mortal end on the wheel, this was regarded as an indication of the mercy of God. I think there's a never mind. You can see for yourself that I think that that's not just misguided. It's well beyond that. Maybe because, in my opinion, Isbell might be one of the better songwriters on the planet at the moment, the hinge of the song is unmistakable, even in the middle of all of that, even in the face of really pressing human questions like the one raised by that part of the song, questions like, what's with all the suffering? Even in the middle of compelling stuff like that, the pivot of the song keeps coming back, and the pivot is this idea that for life to move forward, we have to learn to let things go. We have to learn to let things die. Now, if we just stopped with that idea, we might miss the hopeful part. And that's what I was trying to touch on earlier when I said this is a hard idea to talk about in some ways without getting stuck in the wrong spot. I mean, we already had an epidemic before the pandemic. We had an epidemic of despair, and the pandemic is not exactly moving that other challenge toward eradication. Present circumstances are making that, for most people, more challenging, and that's likely to continue to be the case for some time. So that idea that it's time for something to die can easily get turbocharged by despair, and that combination can lead to all kinds of human suffering. So maybe we have trouble turning the corner on an idea like this because, as a culture, we're increasingly disconnected from the earth and the way that the earth functions. And this is one of the reasons why I think ancient ways of looking at the world are making a comeback, why ancient mythologies and religions are enjoying a resurgence these days, is because, no small part, they reconnect us to the earth as one of their tenets. And it feels like that's something we need. This is a time of the year, for me especially, that makes me aware again of how essential death is to life, sometimes metaphorically and sometimes, you know, biologically, sometimes quite literally. There's a British academic poet and a priest that I've referred to here before, someone whose work I don't follow, but I'm aware of and I dip in and out of, a guy named Malcolm Gait. And Malcolm has reflected on this as well, and he's written this piece about it. And Malcolm is from England, so you have to sort of forgive him for, you know, not taking the deep freeze part of winter into account in his reflections here, because that's not his experience on that temperate isle. But this is what he writes about this season and that idea that things have to die for other things to live. He writes, "I walk each morning in some woodland near my home, and especially savor in this late autumn, early winter season, the damp carpet of fallen leaves, now decaying and forming rich mulch that will feed the soil for future growth. Even in their decay, losing edge and shape, melding and blending together, there is in this carpet of leaves a kind of grace and beauty. The other morning, though, these meditations were interrupted by a sudden intrusion. There, amongst the gold and mottled leaf mold, like some harsh alien excrescence, was a discarded plastic bag. It was totally out of place, and told its own tale of indifference and carelessness. Not just the carelessness of the person that dropped it, but the carelessness of the culture that produced it. The trees shed their leaves, and in that fall and letting go achieve a new grace. The leaves themselves let go of shape and color, and in that change and decay become something rich and nurturing. That plastic bag will just persist in unchanging ugliness, and we who make and discard that plastic will continue to be maimed and made ugly by our accumulations, we who might have learned from the trees something about the grace of diminishment and renewal." I feel like I should read it again 2 or 3 times. I won't, but there's just a lot in there. Again, not a surprise given where it's coming from. Also not a surprise, out of that reflection came a poem. A poem called In Praise of Decay. And for the poetry nerds in our midst, Malcolm is a big fan of the sonnet form. So this is a sonnet. In Praise of Decay. So much is deadly in the shiny new persistent plastic choking out our life, the landfill of each ego's empty stuff, where poison and possession still accrue. So praise him in the old and moldering, in pale gold leaf fall losing shape and edge, in mottled compost rustling and rich, from which the stuff of life is still unfolding. Change and decay is what our plastic needs to break the bleak persistence of our waste. Pray that we learn the lost arts of our past, the arts of letting go and sowing seeds, the secrets of the lowly and the least might save us from the dreadful things that last. If we were in a rehearsal, I would ask to sing the last verse again. I'm going to read the last stanza again, just because I think the rhythm of it's important as well as the content. Change and decay is what our plastic needs to break the bleak persistence of our waste. Pray that we learn the lost arts of our past, the arts of letting go and sowing seeds, that secrets of the lowly and the least might save us from the dreadful things that last. Interesting, hey? Really different perspective. Malcolm doesn't say so in the sonnet, but I know him well enough and I've heard him speak enough to believe that there are things about the very religion that he identifies with as a Christian priest that he would point to as having that same bleak, plastic, change-resistant persistence, when what really needs to happen is for them to stop taking up space and oxygen and, you know, chlorophyll in the metaphor here, to drop to the ground, to lose their edge and shape and become the soil for something new to grow in. In a community like this one, where we exist to explore what we believe, I think one of the most hopeful questions we can be asking ourselves these days, or any day, is what are old ways that I'm hanging on to that just need to die and become the soil of something new? Not always an obvious question to pursue in our lives or with other people that know and love us, because sometimes these are exactly the sorts of things that are invisible to us. If we were going to broaden the question a bit, we could ask, what are the old ways, the old normals that our culture is holding on to that might just need to die to give life to something new, to something fresh? Just to close the circle a bit on the blurb, which, based on the responses I immediately saw or got personally through email, it seems that I may have been uncharacteristically insistent this week in the blurb. And I know I did go on at length about my objections to this idea of new normal. Judy pointed out in her Facebook response to that piece, to the blurb, that the phrase new normal, which I was so strenuously objecting to, was one that she found comforting. And as with many things that have to do with language, my objection is not with the words, which can carry many different things, including comfort. What I want to push back on is the idea that the way forward is to normalize the present, is to quickly establish a new normal. Do we need to practice the protocols that were part of that announcement that I heard in the grocery store? Absolutely. I would heartily affirm that we do. And I will personally, and we as a family, will continue to make that our practice. Should we think of those as normal? Normal means the usual, average, or typical state or condition. That's what the word means. Having a new virus loose in the world is not random. It can sure feel that way, but some of the reasons that we're wrestling with this are readily discerned, and scientists and other thoughtful observers of humanity's increasing impacts on the planet have been writing about them for decades, have been warning about them for decades, have been saying, brace yourself, it's not if, it's when, for decades. It's incredibly, perhaps devastatingly short-sighted of us in the Western world to try to hand this experience we're having off to causes in some other country or culture. I don't want to focus on those details this morning, but it's very easy to defend the argument that COVID is a logical outcome of what has been our global normal for the last many, many years. So normal, while it may include many good things, may also include things that we need to stop doing. I don't want to overtax the metaphor, but the fallen leaf is not the problem. The fallen leaf is the stuff of new life. It's the rich loam in which the seeds grow. Jesus, who had a killer good eye for the stuff of guiding stories, who just consistently saw these images in the world around him that speak profoundly to our life experience, Jesus saw this as a powerful idea. When he said, unless a seed falls to the ground and dies, it remains only one seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds, a metaphor for fruitful multiplying, not for overburdening the earth. In his thought-for-thought paraphrase of this text, Eugene Peterson renders it this way: anyone who holds on to life just as it is destroys that life. The things we make, and not just the material things. I mean, Malcolm's poem is about a material experience, about a plastic bag in the middle of physical leaves. But the things we make that we can't let go of, the things that persist when what they really need to do is stop taking up energy, drop to the ground and decay, those are the problems. Whether those things are material or ideological or cultural, sociological. Those are the sorts of things that I think Malcolm is gesturing towards when he uses the phrase, like some harsh alien excrescence. By alien, he means they're things that do not belong. He means things that don't belong in a story that is older than the earth. In a story that includes the earth, but it includes it in a way that we became aware of as a culture when we saw the earth from space. It includes it as a story that cradles it, that surrounds it, that sustains it, but that is far larger than it. A story in which old ways have to die if we want life to continue, never mind to thrive. So maybe it's time to let the old ways die. It can take a lot to change our minds. It can take a lot to change our plans. And as Isabel points out in that telling lyric, the last chorus, the little lyric change there, takes a dream to change our minds. If our dream gets too wrapped up with getting back to the way things were, with establishing the sorts of norms that allow us to continue our ways of life that set the stage for this problem in the first place, that's not a good idea about normal. That's the idea I was pushing back on. Not the important idea that if we can normalize the things that keep one another safe in this time and practice them as a matter of standard procedure, that we might care better for one another. That idea is easy to affirm. So I just wanted to parse it a little bit, Judy, if you're still watching. Thank you for pointing that out to me. I found it really helpful in my own reflections this week. And my hope, as always, is that the things that we've been poking around in our talky bit will be helpful in your reflections this week and going forward, that we will all have things that we can point toward and go, that's the stuff of life. Or even, there's a thing that was normal that died, and out of it is growing something new. And I feel like, Zach, you touched on the spirit of this a number of times when you were dealing with our community time. And thank you. I thank you with Zach for all the people who shared things in that time. It's so good and so important for us to hear from one another. But one of the things that you talked about, Zach, a number of times there was this idea that it's possible to emerge from an experience like this more hopeful, stronger, with a fresh grasp on life and what's important in it. And even if you didn't use those words precisely, those are the things that I felt from what you were saying and the spirit in which you were saying it. That's what I think I've been trying to explore from the vantage point of maybe it's time for the old ways to die, to make room for new life. So my hope, again, is that this will be helpful in our own explorations, which will not, of course, all lead us to the same place. And that's part of the richness of the diversity of our life together, both in thought and in deed. All right. Peace, everybody. Bye for now. We'll chat soon.